And I'm looking forward to getting back into this today. Now, we've been in the series on the certain events that have happened, and we've got a lot more to go. And I'm going to I was going to get back on that today, and I am. I'm going to take one of them first, the next one first. But then because of all the stuff that happened this week in Israel, might happen, in fact, in our night or there tomorrow, I wanted to talk a little bit about current events because I think you can see God working. And I just want people to be aware of that. And I think it is very important. So we're going to do that today. And you know, the news is just, I couldn't put this together until really, even including yesterday, there was another event. So you know, it just a lot of things happening that Christians need to be aware of, because if you go with the flow of the media, you know, you could find yourself on the wrong side of what God's trying to do. So it's very important that we're aware of these things. Now, I'm going to start with this, though. We were in Genesis, and we talked about God's blessing to the people and the promise of the Lord of the land. And we went all through that. And then God said in Genesis 12, I'm going to bless those that bless you, curse those that curse you. And we've looked at several things here that are more, in my opinion, more than coincidence, especially when we get the whole list together. Every time the United States tries to, or not only the United States, we're about to start spreading this out to the rest of the world, getting involved, starting to criticize Israel, they find themselves on the wrong side of God. We've gone through three. I won't name them. They're all on our online if you want to see them. The last one was the week before last we did 9/11. 9/11 changed the world. It didn't. Our president at the time, George W. Bush, was the very first president. Now, the two-state solution had been floated way back earlier as a term, but the first president to support it, publicly support it, and go for it, was George W. Bush. And I mean the next day, the moment he was going to formally announce that, we had 9/11, and a formal announcement was never made. So there was a very severe, 9/11 is big for the United States, but initiating that two-state solution was big for God. And so God dealt with it. And you could say, no, I don't think anything had anything to do with it. You go back and listen to that a couple of weeks ago. There's some other things that happened there. And we're going to talk about some more, and you can draw your own conclusion. I'm just saying, I believe what God said in Genesis 12 is coming to pass and will continue to come to pass. And I'm going to continue to talk about that as we go through here. Now, when I get a good run here in the next time or so, when I can do a few, there's a few more Sundays, but I'll hit several in a row. I won't just do one like I'm going to do today. It'll be just number one. We're in number seven now, event number seven. There was a time we had 562 tornadoes in one day. It was about 10 days, in 10 days. And so we're going to go back to 2003, so just 2 years after 9/11. This is a picture of, on the left, Ariel Sharon, who at the time was the prime minister of Israel, George W. Bush. Now you would think, you know, only 2 years after 9/11, somebody would have put a few things together, but they did not. And so 2 years is all later after 9/11, he's still at it. By the way, I said this the first time, and I don't say it every time because I know it wears on people, and I always say, this is not a political thing. I'm talking about every one of the presidents. It doesn't matter, Democrat, Republican, if we ever got an independent and they did it, so I'm speaking biblically here, not politically. I voted for George W. Bush twice, just to tell you, so you know. So I'm not trying to do that. And I know we're in election season, and I know all that. And on the right is President Abbas, the head of the Palestinian, same guy that is there today. And so George Bush wanted to meet, and so he launched something called a roadmap to peace to implement this a two-state solution. And so he did this in 2003, and the deal was Palestine would have to stop bombing Israel. And what did Israel get in return? What did Israel have to give up in return? Land, certain land. Basically, they had to go pretty much to pre-1967 borders. So Israel, you give up your land and we'll stop bombing you. Does that sound like a fair deal? Well, that's the deal that the world made Israel, pressured Israel into agreeing to, and that was this particular deal right here. And so this is was launched. You can tell, I mean, it didn't. We're 2024. Tonight in Israel, there's no telling. Well, last night in Israel, there's no telling how many bombs happened. Tonight, there's no telling what how many. So this didn't work, did it? There's no solution here, in other words, and nobody's held their agreement on the bargain. I would say this, just to be transparent here, fully transparent, the United States was not the only one in this, even at this time, although we're the one that pushed the first one. There was a group, and that they were listed on the previous slide, but there's a group of four that got together, United States, the UK, the EU, and Russia. And so it kind of like that. And that was called the Quartet. And so we're going to talk about the Quartet a little bit as we go along. And I'm going to show you a scripture that mentions four countries that are after Israel when we get there. So technically, the Quartet was in on this, but we're the ones that led it. And so it was the U.S. that drove the deal. It was announced April 30th, 2003. April 30th. The dates are always important because that's the date you look around and see if anything happened. April 30th, 2003. The next day, that day it was announced. For the next 10 days, actually maybe a little bit into the 12th day or so, we had tornadoes in this country. Some of you may, depending on where you're living, might even remember that or might have been affected by it. This is, I think that says 1900, but in this particular time period, because you could say, well, look, in May, we always have tornadoes and tornado warnings. We don't seem to have as many here as we did, seem like we had when I was a kid growing up in this area. But maybe our weather stuff is more sophisticated now. But we always had some. Yeah, we did. This is how many we normally have had for all these years in this particular time period. But in that year, we had this many. See that? I mean, my pointer, there we go. That's in 2003, April 30th through about really May 12th, but the big glut came in this sort of 10-day period. I mean, tornadoes just 3 and 4 times the normal amount. And so it happened the same day it was announced. Israel, when they shook hands, had to agree you can't read that, I'm sure, but I'm just, Israel had to agree to a certain language, and they were not allowed to even change the language. And so Israel had to issue this statement themselves. They had to issue the statement affirming, and I'm going to read it. This is what it says here, the commitment to the two-state solution version of an independent, viable, sovereign Palestinian state. They had to agree to that, and of course, in that whole document listed, you know, what options there were for land and so forth, and so it was announced. The hands were shook, and you know what happened? The tornadoes hit. So this is a listing of the dates and how many. This, if you can see the red in that map, that's where it occurred. So in this kind of big area here, some of you may remember Moore, Oklahoma. But 21 tornadoes in 5 states, 29 in 7. This is the next couple of days. May 4th, 85 and 8. May 5th, 21 in 7 states. May 6th, 75 tornadoes in 13 states. This is more Oklahoma plus some others. 158 tornadoes in 21, 562 tornadoes. At the time, it was the worst weather event in U.S. history. I don't know if we've had some worse since then, but just at the time, that was the marker of the worst weather event in U.S. history. And you know, the date of 10 days is significant in the Word of God. Now, again, this, to in me, my way of looking at it, this is a little bit longer than 10 days. And I'm not trying to take verses out of context, although that's, you might say, what I'm going to do. But I just, as you read through the Bible, you notice that 10 days of tribulation can happen sometimes. And Revelation 2, you see that. There's 10 days between the Feast of Trumpets and the Day of Atonement there. 10 days in the fall feast. We've been over the fall feast a few times. Those are significant days. And I believe will represent a time that it will include the tribulation period when that actually happens. The fall, the spring feast, you know, like Passover, unleavened bread, so forth. That those have all been. Not only does Israel carry those out and did have to carry them out in the law, but those that were fulfilled. You know, when Jesus became our Passover lamb and so forth, all of that was fulfilled. We believe that the fall feast will also be fulfilled, even though there's some there are certain things that annually that are celebrated will be fulfilled. The Feast of Trumpets, the Day of Atonement, the Feast of Tabernacles, all that's going to be fulfilled. And between that Trumpets and Atonement, 10 days. And just a kind of a significant time of testing sometimes. I could show you on all of these, I could show you lots and lots of pictures of destruction, but it's not my purpose to do that. It's just to say, you know, in my opinion, it's not a coincidence that we went against Israel, and next thing you know, we had the worst weather event at the time that we had ever had. So we're going to keep going on that study as we go, but I'm going to have to shift. Let me give you the list here. So there's the full list. So we add number 7 here. On April 30th, 2003, we launched the Roadmap to Peace, which didn't give us any peace, but it gave us 562 tornadoes. And so we'll just keep all that in mind. Now, I'm going to turn to, in the next time we have left, a little bit about what happened in the last week, especially in Israel. I'm not going to start in Israel. I'm not going to say too much about the obscenity of the Olympics. You know, it used to be that you train for the Olympics, you go over there and you run your event and do your thing, and everybody watched, and it was, you win or lose, and that was the big deal. And of course, and I'm not going to put it up there, the reenactment of the Last Supper. I just decided, you know, I'm not going to do it. But is the Olympics a place to mock God? Is the Olympics a place to mock Christians? And just for the point here, just to make it, we have to know that in the last days, this is what's going to happen. And so it's also a picture of the last days. Did they make fun of Islam at the Olympics? They did not, did they? Did they make fun of Buddhism at the Olympics? No, they did not. Why is it that everybody is always against one's religion? Christianity. Why would that? You know, is there persecution of Buddhists in certain places? I'm sure there is somewhere, but the reason that we're going to face persecution is because, you know, the devil is out there fighting against the Lord. I mean, that's it. If you want to know the bottom line, it's a spiritual battle, and the devil knows which religion is the true religion, doesn't he? And he knows which God is the true God. And Jesus warned us it's going to be like this. Now, we have not had all that much persecution. I'm going to show you a map in just a moment. I got this from the World Watch. You can go online, find this exact same next couple of slides, including the map. According to them, 365 million Christians in the world suffered high levels of persecution last year. I mean, that's high levels, and that's not just an insult. What this other stuff says is 1 in 7 worldwide. 1 in 7 Christians have been persecuted this past year. 1 in 5 in Africa. 2 in 5 in Asia. I mean, you know, 40% in Asia of Christians are under persecution. This is their map. I scooted it over because basically there's none to speak of in the U.S. and in Canada. So a little bit in Central America here and South America. But, of course, the big amount is in Africa and Asia. Massive persecution in those places. Underground church in many of those countries. I hope once in a while or all the time, but we should remember to pray for our Christian brothers and sisters that are in other parts of the world that are suffering for their faith and standing up for their faith. And so, yes, the Olympics was a slap in the face. I do not consider that persecution as much as, you know, I just felt like it was a mockery to God. And mockery to all Christians, yes, but to God. And I feel like you do. I was not happy about it, but I do feel like that's where the day and age we live. Now let's keep going here. I want to bring up all the things that have happened in the last few days. This happened Wednesday. So today's Sunday, 4 or 5 days ago on Wednesday. The Hezbollah commander, Shukar, I'm going to say every one of their names probably wrong. I'll try to say do the best I can. But this is the airstrike in Beirut, Lebanon that happened. So if you remember, there was some kids in Israel playing soccer. And all of a sudden, here comes this bomb from the north and killed many of those kids. And this is the guy that orchestrated that attack north of Israel. And so this is from the north, Hezbollah, one of their biggest leaders. It looks like something is about to happen. And the United States, many, many countries started adamantly not only requesting their citizens to leave, but telling them to get out and get out of Lebanon. And of course, it's been going on for a little while, but yesterday there were more than ever. Many flights canceled, planes not going in there, and so forth. I saw one note, I think legitimately from the U.S. Central Command saying, find any flight you can and get out of the country. So we will see. But this guy, he bombed the soccer field, and then Israel went back in, and in the very specific spot that he was at, they bombed that building, and they killed him. Now, he's a top, if you remember him, he's a top military commander for Hezbollah and was very important in procuring the missiles and guided missile systems they have. But not only that, we have a reward for this guy in the U.S. In 1983, some of you will remember this, but the barracks, military barracks in Beirut was bombed, and 241 of our servicemen, U.S. servicemen, were killed. 58 French servicemen were killed. And we have, look, I'm not being critical to our guys. I'm just saying we supposedly have been looking for this guy since 83. He bombed that soccer field, and 2 days later, Israel killed him. And we should have, I'm going to meddle here for a second, I'll get right back on. And we should have celebrated and said, you know, the guy that killed our military men, I mean, we've now gotten some payback for that. Maybe we're not supposed to. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. I understand all that. I'm just saying, you notice you can barely find it on the news who this guy was. You can notice why is that? Because Israel did it, and our administration is worried about Michigan, aren't they? The two-state solution they're worried about really is Michigan and Michigan. And so they're not going to do something that, so they're working, our administration is working against Israel. And even though we are offering help, I'm not saying we're not, but publicly and in anything like this, a celebration of something like this, we are not doing. And in fact, we're the president was upset at Netanyahu. Netanyahu was here. He left early when some things started happening, went back to Israel and has been day and night in their command center. But anyway, this is the first thing that happened. Then Ismail, he is the top leader of Hamas. So he's the guy that sat in Qatar in his mansion. This guy's a billionaire because we've been sending millions every year over to the Palestinians. He's the head of Hamas, but they're the head of the Palestinians. And he's been raking off that money. The guy's got billions living in a mansion in Qatar. And he's the guy that directly, you can find this online. See, I started put it in there, I decided I wouldn't. I didn't think I'd have time, and I don't. But you can find a video on him where he talks about the things they did in October. But if you remember a few weeks ago, the president of Iran and the primary contact between Iran and Hamas were in a helicopter together. Remember that? Helicopter crashed. Four helicopters were traveling. Only one of them crashed, and it was the one with the president of Iran and so forth. So that Iran had to get a new president. So Ismail, he travels over to Iran to be in the installation of their new president. He goes over there. And I just want you to think about this for a second. He's not in his own country. He's not in Gaza, of course, and he's not in Qatar. He is in a different country, Iran. Big place, Tehran, big city. Lots of buildings. Somebody had to find, it was only his room that got blew up. Somebody had to find the right street, you know, the right building, the right floor on that building, and the right room. And there's all kind of rumors on what happened. Some say it was something already in that room that they were just ready to set, that had been there a while. Iran is refuting that because it embarrasses them that this happened on their watch. They say a short-range missile came in there, so we don't know what happened. What we know is he was the head of the whole thing, the head of Hamas, and they had his funeral. And Qatar was mad, very upset. You can tell which side of this thing they're on. Iran is embarrassed. Hamas is greatly wounded right now, greatly wounded. Interesting, two countries, Saudi and UAE, told their citizens, you are not allowed to mourn. UAE has an agreement with Israel, peace agreement with Israel, and Saudi wants one. And Saudi's a little bit, you know, got to watch them back and forth, but they did not allow their people to mourn or to show up at that funeral. This is from the Jerusalem Post. It's a whole different league, a whole different game now, as experts claim these two guys' death could change a war. It will change a war. I don't know how it will, but I mean, you basically have the head of Hamas and a very high guy. If he's not the head of Hezbollah, he's very, very high and called a lot of shots and so forth. So probably I would believe that, yeah, that's going to change the war, all right. Well, then we attack somebody in Gaza. This was Thursday. And this guy, he's the guy that ran the attack in October. He's the Hamas guy that was the manager of that attack, architect of that attack. This guy we've been after for a while. Israel has been after for a while. He has survived multiple assassination attempts. He had a nickname of the Cat of Nine Lives, because he just kept living, even though you thought they had him going to keep living and so forth. Well, I guess we got to number 10. That's all I can say. The guys, now just, I mean, you know, one after another. Do you see this? One after another are the top guys. Yesterday, the West Bank, another skirmish. This is from Reuters yesterday. And a top commander of Hamas in the West Bank. So I've always said now, there's several hot areas, but there are three right around Israel, three really, really difficult areas that when Joshua was supposed to clear out the land, and he did, and I'm not criticizing Joshua, but when he went over supposed to clear out the land, there are three areas that they made deals with people and did not fully clear them out. One was in the north, and one was in the south around Gaza, and one was on what people call the West Bank or Judea and Samaria. Those places never got cleaned out like God said, I want you to do, and that's the place that Israel's having all kind of trouble today. And I'm just going to say this, so what did God allow happen? Well, first thing is God put two guys in a helicopter. The president of Iran. So Iran is directing all this, of course, directing these armies. President of Iran and the contact person for between Iran and these armies, God takes care of them himself. Then the head of Hamas, then the head of Hezbollah, and then a pretty good big guy in the West Bank. I mean, if you don't think that's significant, that in just a few days' time, the top group of that whole deal is just wiped out. Look, only God could be in part. I'm telling you, just it's not a coincidence. You as Christians, and you know, we all know this. It's important when you see God is doing something. It's important to get behind God on the things. Not really about what I think. It's the same as if, you know, our pastor and I have talked about it a few times before, just talking, you know. When you see, when our church would see like a missionary or a mission program, not that we don't support everybody, but when you know, you just feel it and you know God's in this thing, man, we get behind it, right? We want to get behind. We want fruit out of that. We want to support it. We want to get. When you see God doing something, it's always good to get on that train, isn't it? And when we see God going somewhere, similar and but conversely, if you see God is working against something, you ought to get away from it, not be for it. And that's my concern on some of the U.S. activity. I'm not here to criticize anybody. I'm just saying it is clear what God's doing. And it's clear what God thinks. And it's just pretty clear the situation we better take. It was good to see, not that we want to send our men there, but I did tell Donna two or three days ago when this law this was coming down, I said, if you see a report in the next two or three days, or if we see a report in the next two or three days that the U.S. is sending warships over there, more warships than we got, and people, you know, it's getting serious and that Iran is going to retaliate. And sure enough, yesterday, it was announced that 4,000 Marines, which, again, I'm not saying that's good. I'm not trying to make it yes or no, good or bad statement. I'm just saying that we are sending more warships and 4,000 Marines. This thing could, and that could deter Iran from acting. This thing could spin out of control. I hope that you are praying for Israel. I hope that you are praying for our leaders, because our leaders need it, and they need to be making good decisions. So U.S. said, this is from JNS, an Iranian attack on Israel could be worse than the April assault. And so it could be, and at least we're sending troops over there to support, and hopefully they don't have to get into it. Hopefully just our presence will make Iran think. There's all kind of checked early this morning because it's been rumored now for a little while, but there's all kind of thinking that Monday is, which would, there, I didn't look, but I'm going to guess 9 hours ahead of us. So it'll be in our night tonight. We'll see what, if anything, happens. So I hope you're praying for Israel. We are commanded to pray for the peace of Israel. It's one thing that Christians are supposed to do. We're commanded for that. And I hope we realize that and follow that commandment. We will be held accountable for following the principles God's laid out for us. And that's one of those. This is also from J&S. Israel should not help the Biden-Harris administration appease Iran. The walking of the fine line with Iran from Obama to Biden and Harris has not worked. I mean, they're just playing us along. They're not. It's the same as the deal Bush tried to make that I told you about 2003. It didn't work, and so you've got to find other means to do that. So Israel is defending themselves. And it has caused a breach. I mean, you've seen the quote probably from our president, but Washington is unhappy, even though Israel's looking at it saying, man, we've had a big week here. We've killed the head of Hamas. We've killed one of the, if he's not the head of Hezbollah, he's one of the top guys. We killed a top guy in the West Bank. We've made some headway this week. And Israel's pretty happy, and Washington's unhappy with it. And so there's caused a breach. And I think this is written from, this might be from Caroline Glick, I think. And she basically said you're going to have to accept the breach. So one other thing that Israel announced is they're going to build a massive munitions factory. The U.S. is slow walking the munitions to Israel. And so Israel has decided, we're just going to build our own. And so they're going to start building their own as well, and they probably, that slide right there, the is very prophetical about what is going to happen. We're building a new U.S. embassy in Beirut. Not a good place to be building a new building right now, I don't think. It is going to be the second largest that we have. Our largest cost us $1 trillion in Iraq. Second largest is being built now in Beirut. Nobody knows. I mean, this is just an article from a good while ago because this question has been around because we've been building it for a while. The question is, I mean, why are we doing that? What is the reasoning and understanding and rationale for doing that? That's the question. We'll just have to watch that and see what we're going to do out of there. I'm sure there's a military strategic reason, and probably, by the way, it's important. I mean, we probably need to keep our eyes and ears on some things, and maybe, but just letting you know, and I hope the thing makes it through. In addition, then, if that wasn't enough, all that's been the Middle East. If that wasn't enough, in Venezuela, they had elections this past week. And Maduro, who's the president, he's been, by the way, a lousy president, and he lost. But he won't leave. And he's got the military, so he won't leave. And a guy named Gonzalez clearly won. This is a article where our Secretary of State saying there's overwhelming evidence that Gonzalez won, and yet he won't leave. And so I don't know what's going to happen. I wondered, because it was shown that some of the military in Venezuela were turning against Maduro, and I thought maybe his support would crumble. But then this report came. All of a sudden, it just got, all of a sudden, he had plenty of support. What happened? This Wagner group, this is from the Defense Post, but this Wagner group, which is the traveling army of Russia, they showed up and started supporting Maduro. And, I mean, this I've mentioned to us this class before, We've got to watch this Wagner group. I mean, they were in Afghanistan, of course, they're in Ukraine, Africa, all over the place. But there's going to be some wars and rumors of war, and there's going to be, there could be, I see a place for a traveling army in the book of Daniel. We'll just have to keep our, not only keeping an eye on this group, I am keeping an eye on who's going to be the leader of this group and who the leader got killed, assassinated a few months ago. And who's going to show up as the leader? And is that going to be internationally known or not? It's worth keeping an eye on that Wagner army, the Wagner group, paid for by Russia. So that's happening. Ukraine has got all these drones that we've sent them and built and so forth. They're hitting now tremendous amounts of Russia's oil installations in several places in the country, not just one. At first it was just one. Now they're just everywhere hitting those things. For the first time, there are some war experts wondering, hey, is Ukraine going to be able to fight them off or not, maybe? Because up till now, it's just been a matter of time. It's just been a matter of how much the West money is going to put in there and how many soldiers Ukraine had. But, drones have changed the warfare a little bit, and so that has happened. Then, this is a few days ago too, but just to add to the mix, I'm talking about right now the oil countries. And Saudi Arabia, a huge oil country, they warned the G7, which we're a part of, that because we have seized the assets of several, in the sanctions, we've seized a lot of assets of Russians. And we've used, by the way, the G7, has used some of those assets to do things with. And so wasn't really our money to do it with, but it's what I understand we've done. And the Saudis have warned us by saying, if you do very much of that, we're going to, and I'm sure Russia told them to, but we're going to sell your debt. In other words, we got the money. We're holding your debt. We're holding your bonds. There's no telling how many U.S. bonds they hold. We're going to dump it. And that's just a threat that they made. But the reason I even bring that up is this. The Mideast is on fire, right? These are oil-producing regions, not the U.S., pretty much every major one except for the U.S. Iran, certainly. Venezuela. Russia. Saudi. The Saudi's not under threat, but they are threatening. Normally, just if I took us back 10 years, when a firecracker would go off in Iran, the oil market would pop 5%. Not because you'd be worried that the price, oil's going up. With Iran, Venezuela, Russia, Saudi, summertime in the U.S., high usage, you would think oil should be at $100 a barrel. I'm not saying I want it to be. I don't enjoy the price we got now, but I'm just saying, and so I pulled the chart for us to take a look at. This is the last year. I checked it this morning. It was $74.14. So this was yesterday, $73.52. So this is the year. I mean, that's probably getting closer to 90. We're down here, up. We've gone down. I think it's gone up just a little bit, 74.14. My point is, something's not normal. Something is not normal out there. Now, I'm just a citizen, okay? Nobody's told me anything. I don't speculate. But somebody's holding this price down artificially, which it's an election year, and we've got ways to do that, and that may be what's happening. Because it's hard to get elected if everybody's paying $5 for gasoline. That's, because you're reminded every week when you fill up, so it's hard to, that could be. Or I'm not predicting it. I'm just private citizen making a comment, or a major recession is under the coming, because people think, well, price of all that should be, it should, yeah, okay, crude should be 100, but all I'm willing to pay is 75, because in a couple of months nobody's going to want it anyway. Yes, we'll continue to use it, but not like we are now. There's going to, you know, and then Friday, this unemployment number came out, which normally you don't make too much. I do not make too much of 1 month, because they always, and really they do that, a big news day and all that. They always revise it, you know, a couple, 3 weeks later. And so it's not a good thing to do. But there is this thing called the SAHM rule, SAHM, S-A-H-M, which shows if you got a certain level of unemployment for so long, you're in a recession. Used to, you would say, if your gross domestic product, GDP, is at a certain level for negative two quarters in a row, you're in a recession. We've had that here and there. It hasn't been that in a little while, but this unemployment thing has it. Now, this article says it's a perfect track record. It is almost I would say it's 90% right, maybe 95, but it's not 100% perfect. And it may not be perfect now, but this thing would point to the fact that we are. And I'm just saying some things are going on that that we may or may not be aware of. So keep praying for Israel. Sorry, it's a downer. I didn't mean for it to be like that, but the Lord's still in charge, isn't he? I've got 2 or 3 minutes. I'm really, I'm 10 minutes short, but I'm going to go ahead and use my last couple of minutes here. Just look quickly at Psalm 83, if you would. Psalm 83. I got 2 minutes left. I hate to give them up, and I was hoping to get to this. Psalm 83. Speaking of Israel here and God's people, but this is specific to Israel. Keep not thou silence, O God. Hold not thy peace, and be not still, O God. For lo, thine enemies make a tumult, and they that hate thee have lifted up the head. They have taken, some countries now, have taken crafty counsel against thy people, against Israel, and consulted against thy hidden ones. I don't have time today, but one day I might talk about those hidden ones. They have said, this is what the countries that are going to be named in just a second, they have said this, come and let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance. Is that going to happen? That's not going to happen, is it? That's what they've said, though. For they, verse 5, have consulted together with one consent. They are confederate against thee. And you know what that's saying there? You're confederate against Israel. You're confederate against God. People need to remember that. It's just very important for us to understand whose side we need to be on here. Who's the top of that list? The tabernacles of Eden, Edom, Ishmaelites, Moab, Hagarenes, Jebel, Ammon, Amalek, the Philistines with the inhabitants of Tyre. Asher's joined with them, and they've helped the children of Lot, Selah. I'm going to stop right there. I'm just going to say this, and I'm going to take us through this thing one of these weeks here and show you who all these people are. But these are the countries that outline Israel. The top is Edom. Edom are the Palestinians, today's Palestinians. Interesting, the only one, that when it says tabernacles there, you can go look this up, it means tents, the tents of Edom. Just to show you is how relevant this thing is today, I could show you, I'll try to remember to put a slide in, show you what Gaza looks like today and how people are living. I don't enjoy this. I'm just saying this is the way it is. You know how they live today? In tents. All just acres and acres of tents. They live in, according to the King James word here. It's when I show you a picture of Gaza today, you'll say, well, that's the Tabernacles of Edom. Are we in relevant times? I think we are. Right at the top of the list, the Tabernacles of Edom. And I'll list the others as we go. Let's pray. Our Father, we're thankful for your word. We're thankful, Lord, for what you